is Corolla Digital.
Hi, folks. It's Larry. Larry Miller. That's right. And I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening. It means the world to us over here. And if you like the show, please tell a friend. That's right. Bring a friend over, and it will really help us grow. And it means a lot to everyone here. So please tell a friend. And, well, that means we'll be able to say for a long time, we'll see you here.
From Level 5 City in Glendale, it's This Week with Larry Miller.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who loves old westerns. Hi, folks, and welcome back to This Week with Larry Miller. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And you know what? I say this every week because it's true every week. That orchestra gets better every week and puts a smile on my face as wide as an orchestra. Every time I hear it, of course, that's the Jim Bunker Orchestra and the Penny Clark Dancers featuring boy tenor Mike Parsons asking the musical question, is Dilbert the preferred cartoon of the Larry Miller Drinking Society? First of all, Mike, yes, it is. If I can be blunt, if I may be blunt that way, yes, it is. Dilbert was on TV for a couple of seasons, and I was in it. I played the boss in Dilbert, and they had a good cast, and we had a lot of fun doing it. It's a shame it couldn't have lasted longer. But I always liked that cartoon. I liked the newspapers. And, well, really, mostly after I got the part. Then I really found, say, I like that cartoon. But you know what? It's a good question. Is Dilbert the preferred cartoon? Because I've never known what the word preferred means in a context like that, whether it's something military or something in academia, anything else in any aspect of society. Well, this is the preferred rifle of the—you mean you're ordered to use that rifle? No, it's just the preferred rifle. Well, what does that mean? In the middle of the battle, you can find, you know what I like? I think I like the other rifle better. I prefer that other rifle. But it's this construct we all use, or we've all heard. It's the preferred blank of the blank society. And so I appreciate you writing that. Is Dilbert the preferred cartoon of the Larry Miller Drinking Society? And yes, in the Larry Miller Drinking Society, as you know, we have certain things. We must continue and start a list of things that are preferred in the Larry Miller Drinking Society. I think one of the things that preferred is not having to say to the bartender, excuse me, but nominum quid geminis, which, as most of you know, means you call that a double, which is still that's the preferred question to ask of a bartender who late at night just doesn't give you something to hold the way you want to hold it. That's how that question came up in Latin. Nights on the road where I would have just a few minutes, really, just 30 minutes, 40 minutes, after a show, to go back to the hotel, change clothes, go down to the bar with a book I was reading, and have a drink or two at the bar right there. And I would always, at that time of the night, it's easier and better for a lot of reasons just to get whiskey. It's quicker to pour. You don't really have to get something that's mixable like a martini, although you can and I have. But really what you want is a glass of whiskey. Probably scotch. Could be anything, though. Could be bourbon. But the point is, I remember this distinctly. It happened more than once, many times more than once, and where it's a sort of a young college student part-timing at the bar, and this one young woman was there, and it was late. The bar was closing at 1. I got down there about 19 minutes after 12, so I thought, this is great. I had washed up. I took all my things off. And I put on my hotel bar book clothes. And I was going to do that, go down to the bar. Well, I did do that. And then I was going to read at the bar and have that's about the good time for two drinks, two big drinks. And that was the one time I said, you know what, let me have a, let's see, it was a scotch, I think. I think it was drinking Johnny Walker Black. And I said, let me have a Johnny Walker Black on the rocks, please, and make it a double. And I'll never forget, she put that drink in front of me, and she seemed very nice, a very nice young woman, and she put it in front of me, and I looked at it, and folks, it was not the kind of drink you want to pick up in your hand and say, how do you like that? I'm drinking a drink. It was meek. It was undervalued. It was poorly poured. And I said to her as she was standing there, I just said, pardon me, as she was turning away, and she turned back, and I said, is this a double? And she said, oh, yes, that's technically a double. I gave you two shots in that. And I said, do me a favor. Rather than say to her, let me ask you a quick question. Are you stupid? Rather than say something like that, I said, do me a favor. Just because this is the end of the night and this is what I wanted, I said, do me a favor. Make it a quadruple, okay? Take this same drink and pour two more shots in it, because that's the kind of a glass a man likes to pick up and hold at this hour of the night when he's reading a book by this author. And I didn't throw that in either. That would have made me look like an idiot. But I mean, but she did. She poured in another couple of shots. And that's, I said to her, you know, see, that's the way I like it, because that's the kind of drink I would have poured at home. Okay? That's when you want to lift a glass and say, how do you like that? I'm lifting a glass. I can drink any way I want it. And then I don't have to say to someone, you call that a double? And that's why when here at the show, here at This Week with Larry Miller, we were looking for a motto initially. That came to mind and we started talking about it. What would that be in Latin? And we got a lot of good people writing in. And the one we picked was Nominum Quid Geminus, which means you call that a double in Shakespeare's day, rather in Caesar's day. So in any case, Mike, is Dilbert the preferred cartoon of the Larry Miller Drinking Society? Yes, and the drink that's preferred in the Larry Miller Drinking Society is one where you don't have to say to the person who poured it, excuse me, are you stupid? Which we wouldn't say anyway. Of course, we might think it. In any case, thank you, Mike, for writing that in. Dilbert is still, yes, preferred, and it's still one of my favorite cartoons, but only because I was in it. The truth is, real preferred cartoons, your favorite cartoons, for me anyway, is still right up the middle, the center of the target. It's the Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and Yosemite Sam. It's the Warner Brothers fellas from those days in the 1940s when those cartoons, as I hope you know, I assume you know, are just great. They never stop being great. But they're not preferred by me because I wasn't in them. In any case, thanks, Mike. And by Amazon. That's right, Amazon. That's right, Amazon. What's correct here? Amazon. That's what's correct. What you do is you go to your computer, you go to your laptop, you go to your screen, anything you have, any device you have, and you go to Amazon and get anything in the world you want because they have everything in the world you want. Isn't that right? Wrong! It's not right. It's wrong. You don't do that. What you do is you go to our website here on the show. That's LarryMillerPodcast.com. That sounds like shaving a haircut two bits. LarryMillerPodcast.com. And we have a banner on the podcast that says Amazon on it. It's a little banner, right? Remember, I've said this before, and I'm happy to say it again. I've never actually seen it because I don't need to. I trust Colonel Jeff on this. And I trust Dr. Chris on it as well. If they say there's a banner there, there is. It says Amazon. You press that. You go to that. That takes you to Amazon, and you still buy anything in the world you can possibly imagine. And then one other thing happens. They send us part of what you spend. They send us a percentage of what you spend. And that makes it terrific. That makes them the preferred market to go to by our show. But, boy, folks, go to LarryMillerPodcast.com. Hit the Amazon banner there. Go to Amazon. Get anything you can world in the world you can imagine. And you're happy, you get what you want. Amazon's happy, they sell you everything you wanted. And we're happy because we get dough. So no one's turned away. Everyone's happy. And that's the preferred outcome to any sale, I think, on a laptop. In any case, though, Amazon is still the best for us, and we're glad they like us very much. Which leads us, of course, to the joke of the week. That's right, the joke of the week. The weekly joke. What happens every week is we go to a joke, and that makes it the joke of the week. It's a lot of fun for me to do. I love this very much. Finding it is fun, and sometimes Dr. Chris has come up with one, or he's heard one, and sometimes Colonel Jeff comes up with one, and sometimes I come up with one, and sometimes, as today, we got them from the 100 best jokes in the history of the world list that Colonel Jeff got from the internet some while ago. And this is a good joke, and it's fun, and it's going to be fun to tell, and I hope it's fun to hear. Two best friends have gone camping, and they're in the middle of a wild area, and it has sort of a little river that goes down through, and it turns into a pond at some places. But still, they can set up their camp there, and they're in the woods, and they're having a good time. Because, well, they're both married, and they're still best friends, and they just like being there. And they just like the chance to, well, to lie down, lay themselves down, and put the head back on a pillow or a rock and share stories about life. And then one night, it's not a big camping trip, by the way. It's only three nights. And then one night, the second night, one of the fellas gets bitten by a rattlesnake. He kind of yelps. They're still up talking. They were just drifting off to sleep. He goes, whoa, what was that? They see it's a rattlesnake, and it bit him on the backside. That's a serious bite anywhere. That could kill you. And he's scared and getting more scared, and his friend just says, all right, come on, get up. We'll start getting out of here. But the guy can't walk, and his best friend says, you know what? Don't. Relax. Lay yourself back down. I'll go for the doctor. He starts to walk out. He gets about half a mile away, and it's nighttime. It's going through woods. This is a hard walk and a hard climb up from the riverbank and to get up to the top, to go over the edge on the cliff, and he almost steps into someone's trap. It's a bear trap that was set up, and it's dark at night. He feels so blessed. Luckily, as he gets over the top of the ridge there, some of the lights from a very, very small town that they passed just give the whole valley area enough light for him to see a little more where he's going. He starts to pick his way down, and he goes back down. He makes it back down into the valley there. And he notices the community is still miles away. He gets back down. It takes him the longest time to get to where they parked the car. They parked their camping vehicle, and he gets in the camping vehicle. He finally lets out a breath of relief, starts the car up. It's fine. Goes into the small town, and he asks at the diner that's open all night, where's the doctor? Where's the doctor live right now? I need him right now. And they tell him, well, Doc Robbins lives over here, and, you know, just go down here. And they tell him how to go. It's not that hard to get to. It's not a big place. And he goes there, and sure enough, even in the middle of the night, the door is open, and he knocks, and the doctor just grumbles, come in, I'm in here. And he goes in. The doctor, even in the middle of the night, is operating on someone. The guy says, my friend, though, was bit by a rattlesnake up on the other side of the hill across the crest and down by the river there. And the doctor says, mister, I can't go right now. I'm going to save this man's life. I'm going to tell you exactly what to do. You go back to your friend right now, this second. He needs you right now. What you do is you go down to where he was bitten, and then you get down there and you put your mouth on it. You start sucking really hard and keep going down there, and you get it all out and until you've gotten every drop of it, and then you put a Band-Aid on it and you relax. And he goes back to his operation there, and the guy says, thanks, doctor. And he runs back down to the diner, and he gets into his car, to their SUV, and he drives back the exact way he came, right to where they parked the car the first time, and he starts back up the second side of the hill, the same thing, being very careful as he can be, gets to the top, and he does it. He finally makes it back down there, and he says, did you meet the doctor? Yeah, what'd the doc say? And there's a pause, and then he looks at him and says, he said you're going to die. So that friendship took a southern turn there, and didn't work out at all. Don't worry, I'll tell your wife you died a hero's death, and I'll still look in on your family from time to time over the weeks and months and years, but you are going to be buried here by me because you're going to die. Which leads us, of course, to our most sophisticated part of the show, the Poetry Corner. Yes, that's right, it's the corner of poetry, the Poetry Corner. This is a wonderful and satisfying time of the show. I love the whole concept and reality of poetry. It's something I always thought about doing on a show one day, just to have a portion that's dedicated to poetry, to remind myself and everyone else out there that there are other ways to think and speak and tell stories and describe life, and they are all under the word poetry. And it's a wonderful thing. This time, this week, I'm going to read you a poem that was very famous and has always been by the great William Blake. I've read from him before, and this poem is called The Tiger. Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forest of the night, what immortal hand or eye could frame thy fearful symmetry? In what distant deeps or skies burnt the fire of thine eyes? On what wings dare he aspire? What the hand dare seize the fire? And what shoulder and what art could twist the sinews of thy heart? And when thy heart began to beat, what dread hand and what dread feet? What the hammer, what the chain, in what furnace was thy brain? What the anvil, what dead grasp, dare its deadly terrors clasp? When the stars threw down their spears and watered heaven with their tears, did he smile his work to see? Did he who made the lamb make thee? Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forests of the night, what immortal hand or eye dare frame thy fearful symmetry? And that was The Tiger by the great William Blake. And in a way, it also seemed really appropriate for today, because I just found out in running through the internet and when I was still at home before coming over here that Dennis Farina passed away and just died. He was not an old man. He was 69 years old. The great actor Dennis Farina, and someone I was not only a big fan of, but had a chance to work with and really enjoyed it and really just liked him and imagined, and up till this morning, I still imagined a time when, oh, I would run into him again and we would smile at each other and we would sing a song we sang together on the set of this movie. And I'll tell you, though, this guy was so interesting. You know Dennis Farina. If you don't know the name, you know him. Look him up. It's Farina. He is a guy who has been nothing but great in every movie and television show he's ever been in. And he is so good. He's one of the only actors I know who could be funny and dramatic. He could be sometimes one second after the other. And he could be really frightening as a really mean character. But then he could be, even that same character could be one of the nicest guys in the world in the movie. I think of him sometimes, when so many parts he did. But, I mean, for goodness sakes, when Dennis Farina, to show you, the movie that we were in together is called Bag Boy, B-A-G-B-O-Y, Bag Boy. You can look it up. It's a good movie, too, and there's some wonderful actors in that. But Dennis was the lead in it, and on the day I got there, it was shot in Salt Lake City. I am such a fan of some people. I become just an idiot meeting them. I do. And Dennis was eating lunch in the lunchroom, and the director walked me over to say hello, and he introduced us, and Dennis looked up and smiled, and we shook hands, and I just couldn't resist. I don't know why. Well, I know why. I'm stupid. But I just couldn't resist, and I smiled at him, and I just said, is this moron number one? Put moron number two on. I just couldn't resist. I'm not good at impressions, but one of the parts I loved him in just was Midnight Run with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. It's a wonderful movie. And, by the way, written by my friend George Gallo. And it's a wonderful movie. And Farina was so good in it. And you love him every second of the way through the movie. You actually have to keep reminding yourself, he's a really bad man. This character is a bad guy. This character lives the life of, well, a crime lord. And it's not a colorful life. It's a bad life. But you still love him the whole way through the movie. And that's why I thought the magic movie moment for today, for this week, could be something Dennis was in. And it's, well, been talking about it. It's called Midnight Run. And it's such a good movie. And Dennis, that's the scene he was in. He does so much in that movie. But the scene he was in where he is on the phone and he's talking to his two henchmen who are out there trying to find De Niro and Grodin. And they're not finding them. And Dennis Farina, his character, is playing a Serrano. Jimmy Serrano is his character. And he's getting madder and madder. He's in Las Vegas. And that's why this one time he says to them, oh, hiya, Jimmy. Hiya, boss. And they're on the phone there. And he says to them, is this moron number one? Put moron number two on. And he's got that great Chicago accent. This is a guy, by the way, who was a Chicago cop, a no-kidding real Chicago cop, and involved, you know, in burglary, homicide. This is a real cop for 18 years in Chicago. And as much as I liked Dennis so much, and as much as you like him in the movies and I do, and as much as I think everyone liked him, you always knew, always, that if there was something really dangerous happening and you had to pick, say, a very well-known actor to walk out the door and keep that crowd back and protect whoever was inside, like you, you just know you'd rather have it be Dennis Farina than Alan Alda. Nothing against Alan Alda. I think Alan Alda's great. I love him, but I don't know the man. But, you know, if someone has to protect you and a couple of other wounded folks who maybe have been bitten by rattlesnakes on the backside, you just want, you know, that Dennis Farina look. You'll know when you look him up, or if you already know him, you can see that in your head. He was always a good-looking guy, always looked fabulous in those sport coats and slacks and loafers. I mean, he could pull off anything. And so in that movie, in Midnight Run, where he was so much fun to watch and then so much fun to be scared of and then so much fun to hate and then so much fun to think you're really getting yours now, but so much fun to still think when he says to De Niro again, maybe I see you again sometime. And you know that's not good news. And De Niro, who is a great character in that movie, says, maybe we will. But, you know, when Farina says, maybe I'll see you again sometime, you just know, boy, if this guy beats these charges or only spends a few years in jail, you know what? He is not going to be fun to run into a few years later. So I love that part of his. I love that movie. I love George Gallo's script. I love De Niro and Charles Grodin in it. And so many of the other great actors in it. But this week, for that magic movie moment, the one I look forward to seeing every single time, and now even more so because he's passed on, because as of today, he won't be making any more movies again, but I sure like him still. And just to hear that voice saying, with that strong presence, with that tough guy look, that no-nonsense, don't kid around with me now because I'll kill you. And when he says, is this moron number one, put moron number two on. And you know what? That's as magical a movie moment as I can think of right now, and I'm awfully glad. That movie I made with him, by the way, there's a story I told you a couple of years ago, and I asked Colonel Jeff, I said, would it be okay to tell that story about Dennis Farina again, because he passed away today, and Colonel Jeff was sleeping at that point, so he agreed. But no, you know what? He said, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a good story to tell again. So I'd like to tell it to you right now, that he and I were on the set on the very last day of production. This is in Salt Lake City, remember. He's been there 6-7 weeks, and I've been there just about 3 weeks or close to 4 weeks. And we're standing together. We're in a scene together, and it's just him and me. And I love the guy. We've spent all the time together getting to know. We love the same movies. We like old movies. And we like the same actors and directors. In fact, I said to him at one point, you know, you and I are actually exactly alike. And then I realized, if you compare yourself to, say, a kind of a chubby guy from the suburbs, if that's true, then we're exactly alike. And then I didn't even stop speaking. I just said to him, which makes me realize we're not exactly alike at all. We have nothing in common. But I just, it's just fun being with you. We had the best time together, and we would go out, and people would go to have lunch together, and people on the set, other cast members would go out with him. And he was just such an interesting, cool, tough guy. And this is the last day of shooting, and he and I are in a scene together alone. It's the last scene, last day, last part of the script. And he and I are standing there, and we decided they just have to change the lens. They had to go to the camera truck and get something. Instead of using stand-ins, we thought we'd be there. We'll just stand there. And it's one of those where you don't move your feet because you'll lose the spots you're in. So we're standing there. We're very close to each other. So you know how it is when you're talking to someone. Movie closeness is closer than normal human reality closeness. So in movie closeness, he and I are standing there, and we're just about, our heads are about a foot away, which is very close. And he says to one of the assistants, one of the PAs, they call them, the production assistants, who are on the set, and it's a local young woman who was there, and well, they all loved anything to do with Dennis. They all they just loved him, and why wouldn't they? They'd come in the morning, was always, oh, hi, Dennis, how are you today? They were just got the biggest, all these 19-year-old young women from college there, and that was great to see. And Dennis would always just say, at that moment as they were changing the lenses, he'd say, hey, sweetheart, let me have that cup of coffee, huh? And this is the kind of guy, remember, who could get away with saying, I just said this to Colonel Jeff before, he and I, not that we feel motivated to do this, but he and I could never get across with saying, hey, sweetheart, to someone. I could say that to my wife, but only in certain circumstances. The rest of the time, if I ever said it, ever, she'd look at me and just, you realize she's considering stabbing you to death right then. And so, but he could do it. He could get away with it. And people, it just sounded great. And he never said please, but you didn't mind it with him. I was, hey, sweetheart, give me a cup of coffee. And sometimes he would say that, or sometimes they'd say it to him, hey, Dennis, ready for another cup of coffee? Sure. Thanks, sweetheart. And so they gave him the coffee he had on the set there, and he had the cap on it, and he took a sip, and she said to him, you want me to get you another one? And he said, yeah, that's good. Give me another one. And he took a sip, and we're standing there, and he looks at me. We'd gotten along so well. And he looks at me, and he just says, you know what? You and I are okay. We're all right together. I like being with you. You like being with me. You know what? I think you'd like a cup of this. I think you should have one. Now, I said, you know, I don't need anything. I said, Dennis, you know what? No, thanks. I really don't want it. He said, sure, you like it. He didn't even listen. He just said, hey, sweetheart, get one for Larry, too. And she said, okay, Dennis. And so we're standing there as she goes running off as they're fixing the camera. And he takes another sip, and then he looks at me and he says, you know what? I feel close enough to you right now that I think you could have a sip of my coffee while we're waiting for your coffee to come back and my new coffee. Now, that, if you think about it, is the weirdest thing you've ever heard in your life. It's like someone saying to you, "Say, would you like my toothbrush?" You know, it's a little odd, and it's a little specific. And our faces are very close, remember? And I looked at him, and I didn't even know what to, I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, here, have a sip of my coffee, and that'll hold you over till she gets back with my new coffee and your coffee." And I said, "Well, no, thank you, though. I don't. No, no, thanks. I don't need. I don't even. I'm not even sure I want the one she's going to bring. But no, that's all right. Thanks. You just finished it." He said, "Take a sip of the coffee right now, and you're going to like it, and then you'll know what you're going to get. And because this is a good brew." And again, I'm thinking, what in the world is he talking about? And I didn't speak, but he's close to me, and then he just says again, "Take a sip right now." And remember, this is the kind of look where you think if you're in the interrogation room and that's the detective who comes in to ask you a few more questions, you realize it's not going to be questions. He's coming in there with a wrench and a phone book, and this is not going to go well. And I looked at him, and he said, he wasn't smiling. He said, "Take a sip now." And I did. I took the coffee from him, thinking, what in the world? So I'm still looking at him. I look at the coffee cup. It's got the cap on there. And I said, what in the world? So I tipped it back, and it was pretty full. And I took a big sip, and I realized as it went in and it went down, I started coughing, and I looked at him. That's when he smiled. Folks, it wasn't coffee, okay? It was not coffee. That's the point. I looked at him. I said, "Are you kidding me?" And he started laughing. And I said, "Do you mean to tell me every minute I've seen you on this set, and when they say, 'Hey, Dennis, you want another cup of coffee?'" He said, "Well, it's not coffee." I said, "I know what it is. It's not coffee. It's whiskey." And they would go to his trailer, which was a really nice trailer, and they would pour him, make him another coffee, but it's coffee in quotes. They'd put it in a coffee cup, and they'd put the plastic lid back on the coffee cup, and they'd bring it to him. But what it was, well, 3 or 4 ounces of whiskey. And I said, "Are you kidding me? How long have you been on this set?" 2 months, right? He said, "Just about 2 months." I said, "Do you mean to tell me every single day that when you've asked for a cup of coffee, this is what you've gotten? And when they ask if you want another cup of coffee, this is what they bring you?" And he just says, "Well, sure. What would you do?" And I realized I had no answer for that. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and then she came back with those other coffees, and he knocked back the one he had there. And we took that coffee each, and we're still standing there, just as they're almost ready to shoot. And we looked at each other, and I smiled, and he smiled, and we just kind of toasted the two plastic paper coffee cups and took a sip of straight whiskey, and not a small sip either. Never mind what I don't do. I did it then. And you know what? I thought that was one of the best show business stories I had ever lived through, that I had been a part of. I thought, get out of here. Everyone hears stories from the 1930s and the 1940s and 50s and about the way people acted on sets and how they acted off the set, and Richard Burton, and Peter O'Toole being in a movie together, and then they had both quit drinking, and then they both, a couple of weeks in the movie, they just looked at each other and said, "Well, shall we go out tonight?" And that was about it for the rest of the movie. And you know something? It was a pretty neat thing to get through. Dennis was, God bless him, a great actor and an interesting heck of a guy to get to know. And someone it was pretty neat to hang around. And especially when you can't move your feet and you're standing on a set and they're changing a lens and a camera, and someone brings you two coffee cups that are filled with whiskey, you know what? You think afterwards. And I just smiled. I thought it was just neat. I said, "You are an interesting cat to get to know." And it sure was true. There was a song, as I mentioned before. It's just a little song. It's a movie song. And it was in two movies that we both knew. And these are the movies we like to talk about with me and Farina. And one was called Red River, a Howard Hawks movie. And it was starring John Wayne and Walter Brennan and Montgomery Clift and John Ireland, a terrific movie, a wonderful movie that I like very much. See it sometime, Red River. And then a great version of the song in a great movie called Rio Bravo with, again, John Wayne and Walter Brennan again. It was so good together. And then also there's Dean Martin and Ricky Nelson and Angie Dickinson and so many great actors in that. And there's this one scene where Ricky Nelson, they're part of the group, the team that's going to hold on to the sanity of the town and to keep the bad guy in prison. And the four of them, Walter Brennan, Dean Martin, Ricky Nelson, and John Wayne, are in the main room of the sheriff's office. And as you know, those were never big. And Ricky Nelson has his guitar there. And he starts playing a song that Dean Martin sings to. And this is the song. It's very short. And this is the song that Dennis Farina and I both loved and started singing on the set there. And so, well, it's not a giant gesture, Dennis, but this is for you. It's called My Rifle, My Pony, and Me. Whippoorwill in the willow sings a sweet melody, riding to Amarillo. Just my rifle, pony, and me. No more cows to be ropin', no more strays will I see. Round the bend, she'll be waitin' for my rifle, pony, and me. My rifle, my pony, and me. And in the end, it's Dean Martin singing with Ricky Nelson. And folks, Walter Brennan and John Wayne are smiling. It's one of the nicest scenes. That's another magic movie moment, I think. But I sure am glad he and I liked that same movie. And I sure am glad we spent more than a couple of times singing that song. Dennis, right now I'd like to say, as you know, we hadn't talked about this, but I know you knew alive and you know on the other side now that Homer is Homer and Pluto is a planet. And folks, remember, as always, if you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to and a home to come back to and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. And that is still the truest thing I know. And we're really happy you come with us here on This Week with Larry Miller. We'll see you here next time.
Guests of This Week with Larry Miller stay at the Level 5 Express Hotel, which gets you there faster. Wherever you want to go, you know where you're going. You start at Level 2 and then you feel like Level 5 in downtown Glendale, which will feel like downtown Paris after you get done with it.